Coming in 2026, the Feeding Matters International Pediatric Feeding Disorder Conference explores the theme, Feeding Development, where systems, skills, and stories connect. This entirely virtual conference includes over 30 hours of continuing education with keynote sessions from Emory Center for Ethics Professor John Leisiker and from the family nutritionist Alexandra Turnbull. Attend live, virtually, February 25th through the 27th. View on demand, March 9th through April 30th. Visit feedingmatters.org/conference to learn more. Register by December 31st and save $50 with early bird pricing.
Presented by Feeding Matters with host Jacqueline Peterson and Dr. Haley Estrom.
Feeding does matter.
Hey everyone, welcome to Feeding Does Matter. I'm Jacqueline Peterson with Feeding Matters.
Hi, and I'm Haley Estrom, Associate Professor in the School of Nursing at University of North Carolina at Wilmington.
We
a little punchy this morning.
A little punchy this morning.
We're doing great.
We're doing great. I was sharing with Haley before we started recording that it's often her and I interviewing someone and being able to chat about things. But today I get to interview her and then the chair of our consortium, Rachel, who you all have heard on the podcast before. So hi, Rachel. How are you doing?
Hello. I'm good. A little tired, but good.
You punchy right there with us.
Yes. Yeah. If I start to struggle with my words, I think we're all just in the same boat.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, we are on today to share your experience at the PCORI annual meeting, otherwise known as PAM. And so, Haley, you submitted a poster session detailing about the consortium. Maybe talk a little bit about even before you got to PCORI, like what that was and how you submitted that and how that was accepted and all those things.
Right. We were invited to submit because we have a Eugene Washington Engagement Award through PCORI to do capacity building for comparative effectiveness research in pediatric feeding disorder and avoidant restrictive food intake disorder with our consortium, our family-centered and patient-centered research consortium, which consists of our 20 amazing individuals that are across the United States. And so we were invited to submit an abstract for a poster, and we did. And it was accepted to be presented at the PCORI annual meeting. They have a submission format for that. So we put it into the format and took it to the meeting and presented it.
And for those that don't know, I always think of a poster session like an adult science fair.
Yeah, it's a like, really good way to put it.
Because it's like, it's literally a poster that you stand in front of to be able to share your great work with others that are in attendance.
So there was a period of about 2 hours where we actually stood by the poster and talked to people about it that came by. And then for the rest of the meeting, it was just up for people to be able to go by and look at. So it did have a lot of airtime. I mean, it was up for the next day, or mm-hmm. at least 24 hours. So people could come up and look at it. And I have it home with me now. I'll try to get it up somewhere locally. And then I will pass it on to Rachel and she'll get it some airtime at something local there too.
Love that. And Rachel, what was your kind of expectations going into the meeting versus how did they change once you were there?
So I did a lot of prep work to just get there because for myself, like my anxiety gets really high when I'm going to unfamiliar places doing unfamiliar things. And this was really unfamiliar. It was my first poster presentation. And I think that overall, I didn't really know what to expect at the conference and the meeting itself. But I will say, once I was there, like, it was just kind of like calm. Like, Haley, honestly, like, being with somebody you know and are comfortable with and like knows you really well is really helpful. So being there with Haley was incredibly helpful. And I got to the poster before Haley did. And the people that were on the poster behind us actually ended up like having a connection and knowing a same person that Haley did. So it was like a super small world in that aspect. But I was like, so I looked past the poster and I was like, I'll take a photo for you. And they were like, oh, thanks. And I go, so what is this like? Like, what should I expect? I've never done this before. And they were like, oh, you just stand there and talk to people. And I was like, oh, it's that easy. Okay, that's fine. That's great. Like, as a person who's an extrovert and an introvert in different settings, like, I was like, okay, this has got to be the extrovert time. Like, you got to kind of put on your face. But really, that's really what it is. People come by and like ask you questions or like stand there and stare at your posters too long. So you're like, do you have any questions that I could answer? Like, what are you thinking? And so it was fun. Like, it was fun. I would do it again. I think I definitely, like, I would do another poster presentation again.
Yeah. I was telling Rachel, I've seen those t-shirts that say, you know, introverted, but willing to talk about research or reading. So that is one of the few times that I'll be like, hey, you know, if you have any questions or if you'd like to talk about the, you know, the poster, would you like our, you know, 2-minute spiel, like we're willing to tell you about this, you know, like I will actually lean over and say, hey, you know, happy to tell you about this. So one of the few times.
Yeah.
You'll see me being like, hey.
Uh-huh. It is one of the few times you're the most extroverted. That's so true.
No, it was, I was shocked, right? Because she was more extroverted than I was. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay. Like,
yeah, and then after it's like, oh, true. Oh,
okay. No, yeah. Afterwards, well, we went back to the hotel room, and
needed a little bit of a break from talking to people at that time. That's, I think, the most marathon part about a conference like that is it's a lot of people all the time, and if you don't gain energy from that, you do need recovery.
Oh yes,
but as with all poster sessions, it is interesting that through the years, I've found that we usually have some people approach. And they usually ended up engaging with Rachel. There's usually someone that will come up that actually has a family member that they're like, hey, I think my such and such actually has this.
Yeah.
And this time they were engaging with Rachel.
Yeah.
It was interesting. But that always happens.
It does. I feel like everywhere you talk, and that just goes to show the prevalence.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it was, I think the most fascinating piece was that people didn't know what PFD stood for or what ARFID, and like didn't even realize that those were diagnoses. But then like once we were either explaining it, they were like, oh. And you kind of saw like some of the realization of, oh, my niece has this, or oh, my child is experiencing things like this. And so I think that was kind of a piece. Like, I did give out my email to a couple people just to like, if you need help brainstorming or like knowing what to say to your doctor, like reach out, I'll help you. And I have gotten an email from 2 different people. And so that way, like, at least they have the wording. And one of them was able to get into a gastroenterologist, which is nice.
Yep. So there were a few different pieces of this conference that I thought we could talk about today because I was so interested. Haley was texting me some of the quotes that were being shared during like the keynote presentations. And it was just, it goes to show why being able to approach research and even like improving healthcare from like that patient lens is so important. And so just to kind of dive into that, PCORI is Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute, nonprofit organization. Their mission is to help people make informed healthcare decisions and improves healthcare delivery and outcomes by producing and promoting high-integrity, evidence-based information that comes from research guided by patients, caregivers, and the broader healthcare community. Okay. So that's PCORI's mission, and this is their annual meeting in which many of their projects get together, many of their their patient population and their patient partners is the language that they were using, right? Because I think we often are trying to figure out, do we use person-centered, patient-centered? So they use patient partners, which I really love. And they all gather together to learn from what each other is doing and be able to share their great work, which is why you all were able to share the poster and the great work of the consortium. So maybe let's talk a little bit right now about what were some of the sessions that you all attended and heard, and some of those keynote discussions, and what was the information shared in terms of where this kind of idea of making sure that patient-centered work is happening in the research?
Mm-hmm. Well, go ahead, Rachel.
No, you're good.
Okay. You're good. That first keynote that we were listening to, that we kind of crept in and we're sitting in the back. The keynote was called Learning from Patients, Co-Creating More Responsive Research Through Engagement. And one of the first quotes that I really liked was they were saying, they were talking about healthcare literacy, and they were saying patients don't need to be literate about healthcare terms. Healthcare needs to be literate about life.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't catch who they said that was from. but I really appreciated that quote.
Mm-hmm.
Be literate about life. Because I feel like that's a lot of what we're trying to get people to understand about being family-centered.
Mm-hmm.
About literate about the lives of people who have to work with and care for and make this happen for feeding differences and disorders.
Mm-hmm.
Every day.
Every day.
Yeah.
Multiple times a day.
And how it impacts and shapes and changes the way that we do life every day. And how it's not all bad, you know, and how we don't really want to be pitied. We just want to be assisted and to make it happen, right?
Yeah.
I'm just going to say, the first opening, so like I think it's their president or their vice president of PCORI, like kind of does like their opener. And then they brought in a man who is patient, his partner. I think his first name was Greg. I really loved a lot of the things he had to say. Like, he had a really eloquent job of taking out all of the jargon and making it accessible for people to understand. And one of the things I was kind of telling Jacqueline before we all got started is that when you are in a setting like that, you have so many different professional backgrounds and lived experience backgrounds. There was just like people who had titles that I was like, what is that? And like, I was like trying to Google them on the side because I was like, I've never heard of that before. And being a person who works in like the medical world, like I've heard a lot of things. And so I was just fascinated by how many different minds from all over the United States were there. And I think the thing I loved the most about this conference / meeting was that they were intentional about having time for question and answer at the end. Mm-hmm. And that allowed a lot of room for constructive criticism, feedback. And I think that you have to be really, like, you have to put yourself in a really vulnerable state as a speaker to allow like that question and answer right away, right after. And people were not, like, they were not mincing words. People were very direct. It was really cool to see. Like, it wasn't like that thought of like where the niceties where you're kind of like, I don't want to hurt your feelings.
And somebody even said at one point, like, I'm going to gently say this to you. And I was like, I love that because, like, I need you to understand this is important. This, what I'm about to tell you is important. What I'm saying is important. And you need to make sure as a person who is in that power spot mm-hmm. that this isn't effective or this needs to change. And so it was just really cool. Like, and people were like lining up at the mics to give to
be able to share that feedback and ask
yeah.
questions.
Yeah. Yeah. And the speakers all took feedback so well.
That was like, going to be my next question for you is how they did that. Because I think that's the important part. It's laying the environment to be able to mm-hmm. open it up for feedback, but it's also how you receive that feedback and what you do with it. So they were able yeah. to take it really well.
Yeah. I feel like, I mean, I don't know how I would, there were some really hard questions and I don't know if I would have been the person up there if I would have been like, okay. But I felt like everybody did a really nice job of listening, validating, and then offering change or something along those lines. And I think that's what's important. Like, you don't necessarily have to agree with the feedback I'm giving, but listening and validating it are important. And utilizing what I'm saying or what somebody else is saying to then say, do we need to dive more into this? Is this a discussion we need to have? And so I think that's helpful.
Well, and it was that first keynote where they were talking about doing how researchers, you know, are doing careful, kind, and connected research.
Yes.
You know, and that these are the people, like, they're, it takes a while, but you know, they're the ones that are doing the patient-centered work, and they're doing the IRB, and I appreciated that. I was like, you know, they're careful people. They're paying attention to ethics. They do the IRB, and it's not to make things slow, but they're trying to protect the human subjects, and I did appreciate that. But mm-hmm. it is important to be also to, you know, to talk to the patient partners and say, you know, why you're doing it this way. Like, say, you know, we're working to find the evidence that matters to you and people like you, you know, and to put it in those terms.
Yeah, that transparency of the whys and the whats.
Well, and just at the end of the studies, how can we stay connected and learn together?
Yeah.
If you're interested in that, you know, mm-hmm. like, how do you want to stay connected, but how can we do that?
I'd also say too, like, it was a really, I don't normally say like great networking. I mean, they obviously, it was a really great networking, but I think the fascinating piece was like, I had somebody that came up and was talking to me and I was like, yeah, I'm a speech language pathologist. And they were like, oh, what do you do? Like, what is that? And I'm like, I was kind of shocked because most people know like speech therapy in school or like have some kind of touch point with it. But then I was like, they were telling me about their project and I was like, you should have a speech therapist on your team. Like, you're working on communication and language in your population. And I was like, you should know what my job is. You should have somebody on your team. And I even made the recommendation and I was kind of like, I was like, you should. This and an occupational therapist, if you're working with this population of adults with disabilities and you're trying to figure out the communication piece and the language piece, put that in, please. It will help you drastically and it will actually probably improve and change your outcomes as long as the person is in that specialty. And so I think that was like another just really captivating piece is like, again, what we talk about all the time are the silos.
Yeah. Right? Well, and you have to kind of keep mining for it because once yes. you feel like you've got everybody, that you're still probably missing some people.
Oh, 100%.
And continuously mining for that. Yeah, for sure.
When families face food disruption or uncertainty, every meal can feel even more overwhelming, especially with a child who has feeding differences. That's why Feeding Matters created a food access resources page on their It's Not Picky Eating website to help families find state and national resources as well as guidance and support through Feeding Matters regional community councils. You'll also find a guide to help food banks and community partners better support families of children with feeding disorders and differences, as well as a guide for therapy offices to create community food tables. Visit itsnotpickyeating.org and click the link Food Access Resources.
When we're looking at PFD and ARFID, what you hear so often on this podcast is the need for individualized support, because every child and every adult looks so different in how their feeding disorder and difference is it presents, and the supports that that family or that person needs, and all of those different things. And so that makes research really challenging. And I don't think we've ever gone over the levels of research in this podcast, but I think it was probably covered in some of the education of the consortium. But a lot of times the like gold standard treatment that people are trying to get to in research is like RCT, which is a randomized control trial. And it's very specific. It means that like you've got this group over here and this group, and you can definitively say like this is the best treatment for this. That is really challenging for our field, not only for the like how young the field is, it's still very emerging, but there are many, many complications to that road to RCT for feeding disorders and differences. And so I think that was one of the things that I was kind of interested in, if you had seen others that had struggled with that. And when you were texting, I was like, oh, I wonder if people have like gone away around the idea that this is a heterogeneous population and how to still support them in further the research and not put everybody in the same box or in too many different boxes.
It would be a really cool way to do, like, once feeding is able to do large randomized control trial. That's something that it would require a large randomized
trial. Or even way before that.
Right. So, I mean, once we're at that level, the balanced subgroup discovery would be possible. But first, we need to bet, you know, it's the pre-work. Like, so first, we need some good efficacy trials, which we're at that level now. Like, and then...
Yeah, share more about that.
Okay.
What a good efficacy trial is. Just to make, to be aware of language. I was just trying to be aware of language.
Yeah. So efficacy trials are when we're looking at, you know, how well a treatment works. Just one treatment. So you're doing a good study just to see how well one treatment works. And then you can do comparative effectiveness.
That's the CER that ideally we would like to get
well,
to.
I mean, like efficacy, you could be comparing one thing to a control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That could be an RCT. But I mean, ideally, you would be doing comparative effectiveness and a control. You know, you could be getting big.
Yeah, for sure.
But for a large RCT, you would be doing, you know, possibly like two arms and a control, and you would have lots of subjects.
It's why we need more research funding to go towards this too, because there's still so much more that needs to be researched in the feeding space.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, there was something else that you texted that I really loved too. So oftentimes when we were thinking about how the consortium was being set up between the subject matter experts and project team that was supporting the consortium and the consortium itself, we talked a lot about bidirectional learning. Mm-hmm. That, you know, the consortium members will teach the subject matter expert project team members, and then the project team members, subject matter experts, can share their expertise and kind of teach the other way, and it's that bidirectional learning. They had a different word for it at PCORI. Do you mind sharing that and kind of a little bit about what they talked about in that regard?
Okay. Well, that was one talk that called it that omni-learning.
I'm just cherry-picking from your guys' experience. Yeah.
That's what you're referring to, right?
I was, yeah.
Okay.
So, I was just going off our thread.
So that bi-directional learning or co-learning is what they call it when the parent partners or the you know, like that it's a situation where we're learning from each other in this partnership. So the stakeholders and the subject matter experts, or however it's working within the project, like we're all learning together as we do this thing that we've committed to in the project, right? I mean, so Rachel and Elizabeth and Christina and Shanda and David, and like we're all learning together, and me and Jacqueline, it's been fantastic. We've all learned so much from each other as we have gone through this. Mm-hmm. I've been able to grow so much from what I've learned from you, Rachel. This has been amazing.
I helped write a research paper, and I never did that before in my life. Like, it's just so crazy. Like, when you do talk about it, the amount of knowledge I have gained in, like, just leadership skills, like, ability to write somewhat. It's not great, but it is, I think it will get there eventually. And I just, like, those smaller pieces that you don't always think about, too, like, how to have touch points with people and be a leader, but also be compassionate and empathetic and understanding of where people are coming from. Mm-hmm. And like last night at our meeting, like learning how to let silence be okay. So just like all of the things you learn from each other, and some of them are very unexpected things. But yeah, I would agree. It's insane. It's crazy how much in the last 2 years, just this entire situation has transformed who I am, not only as a person, but as a professional. Like, it's immeasurable. It's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. So, what we could learn from all that is it's not always just this bi-directional learning, because that implies that it's like this way and then it's this way. So it's like it's only happening in like that unidirect, like a boom,
like a ping pong table,
like that. There's not learning happening all the time. So omnidirectional learning means that it's like it's always happening like this, right? And that there's lots of people there, and then it's kind of always happening. So that
acknowledges the system and the dynamic pieces of it.
Right. It's a big dynamic system, and there's lots of learning happening in all the directions. So I think that's what that one presentation was trying to point out. But I don't think that it means necessarily that PCORI endorses the viewpoint of that
point. So I was not trying to speak on behalf of PCORI.
Right. That's all I'm trying to say, is that I don't think that it means PCORI says it's omnidirectional learning, but presentation was pointing out that truly it probably is more like omnidirectional learning, especially when you have, you know, more than two people on the team.
Yeah, yeah.
They're probably thinking about it at the same time.
Well, and so then other sessions that you all attended before we kind of get into the consortium sharing that you did, the poster session, were there any other kind of major key points that you brought back and were like, oh, that's kind of a good light bulb, or that's a good way to talk about that, or anything validating of things that like we've talked about the consortium that you're like, yeah, we're right on track?
Honestly, from the pieces I heard, and maybe it's just I'm super biased, so we'll go with that. I think that we're kind of ahead of the curve in a lot of ways. And I'm saying that in the aspect of when you look at like the heat map that was on our poster that was created, right? When you look at the span across the United States of the people that we have and the effectiveness of like how we are like still a full unit and still cohesive and still putting things together, I think that that's a huge difference and a shift. And I think too, kind of like what we were talking about earlier, Jacqueline, like the culture aspect is so grounded and supportive and communicative that I do feel like we got to get our methods paper done and like out there soon for people.
Yeah.
I think it will really help a lot. And I think that PCORI is doing a phenomenal job of
pushing and shifting language, very similar to how Feeding Matters is doing things in the feeding difference and disorder world, right? And I think they recognize that there's more that needs to be done, which is why I think they structured their sessions the way that they did with the Q&A. And then they sent out surveys at the end for asking for feedback. And they gave you a place, like if you had more direct feedback to give it. But I would say just thinking along the lines of the work that people are doing and how they're getting to it, you can still hear it in some of the researchers' like talks and kind of their mindsets that there's still that power imbalance, right? And when we struggle with that, your research and your outcomes are never going to give you what you're hoping for. You really do have to take a step back and have a lot of self-reflection and reflection over your project to ensure that that more inherent and natural bias that's there, unfortunately, just from that power imbalance relationship, is gone. And so I think that's where, why I'm saying that I feel like what the consortium is doing is slightly ahead, is that everybody that we have come across in regards to like project team or like outside experts coming in have some connection to the lived experience and have had to kind of take like that vulnerable step back from the consortium members themselves and be like, how do we support them without feeling like we are teaching them in like an overbearing manner, right? And talking at them versus talking with them. And I really do feel like what happened at our research priority meeting back in February was like this moment of like a huge pivot and like kind of groundbreaking in some aspects, because there was like finally that moment of like safety at the table together. And I think that a lot of the projects that were presented are getting there, but with their patient population or with just like some of the parameters that are set in place, it makes it more challenging for them to kind of get to the level of comfort that we are as a consortium together, if that makes sense.
It's so true. I mean, I feel grateful in the sense that like as our work has evolved at Feeding Matters, we've been able to almost more slowly incorporate some of these pieces. So they're like really built into the ethos of our work. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think if you're trying to start a project from scratch, to get that jump is really hard because you're shifting something really big. And we've been shifting something really big for several years. And so mm-hmm. to do that in like such a short amount of time is really challenging, I would assume, for some projects. And I feel grateful that we've been able to like get a head start in that in so many ways. And like being an organization that was founded by a parent and a caregiver, like mm-hmm. We had a lot of that, those kind of like pieces in us, I think. And I do think the people that are involved with us are always really cognizant of power and of psychological safety for who is sharing at the time and what they're sharing, and not like having any preconceived notions about what expertise looks like and all of those things. I think those are all components of making a good project work. And so we've got a really great start in that sense. Mm-hmm. Now pivoting a little bit to the consortium poster session, would love to hear more about that.
It was really cool. I mean, like, I know that sounds really generic, but it was really cool. There were so many posters. So that I think there was like six rows maybe, of like four. Yeah, I don't know. There was quite a few, maybe eight. There could have been more. And then like four posters in a row,
yeah,
front and back. So yeah, like there were a lot of posters there, but there were also a lot of people walking around. And we had kind of a really good spot. I'm not going to lie. We were the front row and we had a corner. So we had like space to kind of stand. Other people were kind of like sardined in. And I was like, oh, thank God. Because I was like, that's too many people walking by. But I think the cool piece of it was that you could really see kind of like light bulb moments for people when they walk by the poster, like, because you're kind of just like, you're standing there and you're smiling. I'm going to narrate this because I'm doing it. But like, you kind of just like stand there and have like your smile on, and you're like, and it's almost like you're like looking at them like, do you want to talk, or are you an introvert and just want to look at the poster? Like, how do you need me to meet you where you're at? And so it was cool because there were several people who stopped by the poster who came from just different backgrounds in general and different professions, and some of them were patient partners, and to have them ask just different questions. I think the piece that's so fascinating is like different professional brains or patient brains have different questions. And so you really like, you kind of on like the poster is divided up into sections and categories essentially. And so they will ask questions that their brain gravitates to. So it was cool because like you, with one person, you would be talking about like the outcomes and like what those look like. And with another person, you'd be talking about the methods. And then some of the patient partners were like really wanting to get to the root of like what feeding differences are.
What questions did people ask when they were talking with you, or what comments did they make about the consortium?
We had some people that were interested in, you know, would we be sharing the methods of how we were able to put together this consortium from over the, you know, the continental plus Hawaii of the United States, and meet across all those time zones. And we were able to say, yes, that's on our plan.
Several people actually asked about the podcast too. And they were like, yes. So how did the podcast like come to be? And like, what's the purpose of it? And it was really cool to be able to be like, you know, honestly, the podcast is such a great educational tool for everybody. Like the language, like even guests that come on to the podcast are mindful of language, because a lot of parents and patients and lived experiences are listening to the podcast. It's not just for professionals. And so having that conversation, there were several people who were like, so what's PFD? What does that even mean? Like, isn't that just picky? Y'all know how I feel about the word picky, but It was just cool.
That's
because
specific to you, I feel like that's most of our community.
Yes. And so it was neat because then you have the opportunity to advocate and educate, and you give them a reshaping of the mind. Like those kids in your world that you view as picky or just kind of like, oh, they'll eat when they'll eat, you know, we're shifting the mindset and we're giving them access to Feeding Matters website. Like, you should really go check out our website. Like, I think it would be really important for you to check out the website with, and like shift your mindset a little bit and think about like how much food is centered in our worlds and how hard it is for people who have challenges with that to be in a world so food centric. So that happened. We had a couple people with lived experience come by and like ask more pointed questions. Like a person had come and was talking about their own child and their difficulties with their child's eating. And I like kind of stepped to the side and was talking to this person because they needed education to support their child's health. They've been fighting for a year to get answers. And so one of the big pieces we wanted to make sure of was like, you know, getting the support where you need it and doing what Feeding Matters does is providing support and education to people so they don't feel isolated, alone, and are waiting and waiting and waiting.
Yeah, I need to echo your points about people asking about the podcast too. We did have several of those. And it was nice to be able to say, yes, the podcast came exactly from the training, originally the training for the consortium
for
members.
Sure. Yeah.
And, you know, so the original first few podcasts were trainings that were generated for the consortium members that we converted into podcasts. And then we started having you know, other stories from consortium members that were shared and, you know, other things that we thought would be great to have in podcast form. So it's really just grown from there. The podcast themselves ended up being almost generative for some of the prioritization.
Mm-hmm.
Also.
Yeah. I think like other pieces too, it was cool because other poster people walk by and like kind of like ask questions and compare like what they're doing to what you're doing. And so I think it's cool just to have like that research aspect brain where you really have to kind of be into the numbers and the pieces to have those conversations. So it's a lot of code switching. It's a lot of like really knowing what you're talking about and feeling confident in what you're talking about.
Our neighbor poster that we knew or that I had known, they were from Duke. And mm-hmm. I had shared a postdoc or overlap postdoc with the senior author or one of the senior authors on that other poster. Her name's Michelle Scott and Franklin. And they're at the Duke Policy Center. So that was pretty great. Well, we actually have some things in common with them.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, and it just goes to show how often we need to be talking to circles that aren't our own to help with that advocacy and information about eating disorders and differences. Rachel, you had a story you wanted to tell us.
Oh, yeah.
About like what it does mean to advocate for feeding disorders and differences in a space. So do you want to share your story?
Yeah, I can do that. Oh, man. Okay. This person, so there were two speakers that were giving a talk, and this is where I think it's hard when you are a person that is in a place to really just communicate with people and you have a lot of people listening to. Everybody's going to kind of nitpick what you're saying, I think. And I think having compassion and empathy and understanding is important. So I want to preface with that.
Well, and this within a keynote that, I mean, it was a keynote where they had been saying some things that really had resonated well.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And
then they said something that didn't. It was a clunker.
So they got it like 90% right.
Yeah. No. And really, honestly, I don't think that she thought that it meant what it was received as.
Definitely not. Yeah.
It was not intended. And again, kind of like we were talking about earlier, the repair was there, right?
Yeah.
So when they were talking, one of the conversations, which is very near and dear to our heart as a consortium, because it's something we have used as a visual representation, was they were talking about like being at the table as a patient partner. And she was quoting a friend of hers where she essentially just said, if you're not on the table, you're on the menu. And I felt myself tense. I'm pretty sure I felt Haley tense. I did kind of like have to just take some deep breaths. And something I'm working on, like with my professional brain and lived experience brain, is to not jump to judgment so quickly. It's to take a step back and understand the perspective. So I pulled out like my iPad where I was taking notes, and I was shaking a little bit, because for me, like, that's really hard to hear, not only as a person who has an eating disorder, not only as a person who grew up being labeled certain ways with feeding differences, but also just knowing that there were other people in that audience hearing that. And the perception of it is challenging, because the way I perceived it may be perceived differently by a different patient partner or lived experience. Like, I think very similar context. We don't want that to be the takeaway. And so I kind of wrote out what I wanted to say. I didn't use it. I used the concept of it when I got to the mic, but I did. I stood up. I was the first person at the mic. I was like, listen, here's where we're at with this, right? When, as a person with lived experience, as a person who is also a professional,
It is not my job to give you my voice. It is not my job to sit at your table. It is your job to make that table feel safe for me to sit at, right? It is your job to make it warm, inviting, comfortable, especially if you want my voice. And so I just kind of urged her to kind of shift her mindset in that process and to use other language, because I'm never on the menu, to be quite honest, like in that aspect. If anything, I'm the chef. Like, I am the person cooking things and serving dishes and really giving you my input. And I will forcibly give it sometimes if I feel like that needs to happen. But I didn't want other people to take away from that. Like, if you're not showing up as a patient partner with your professionals, that it's on you. Because it's not. It is the soul, like in my mind, and this could be different for other people.
So much on them.
Correct. And we already have enough on our plate, right? We're already going to all 100%. Of these different people.
Yeah.
We're already doing all the million things in the world. That can't be the message that we send out. And so I don't even, like, honestly, I really did black out when I was talking. Like, I was like, I got it done and like I went and sat back down. And like afterwards, Haley was like, no, people were in agreement with you. And it was fascinating because the one thing I do remember was that after like I said what I said, more people came up and stood at the mic. And there were more hard conversations had after that. And I think that's where it's hard. Like, you can be afraid to say something, but if you don't, people don't learn and people don't grow and people can't change. You're not giving them the opportunity. And that's kind of where that judgment piece comes into place. I think, one, it's valid for us as lived experiences to have that judgment because it's a safety protocol. Like, it's a safety measure for us. But if we're constantly letting that take the reins of things, we are missing opportunity to properly educate the professionals in the world that we're dealing with or in the projects that we're working on. And so having that compassion lens, like, she was like, she touched her chest and she was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. And she clarified and she agreed and validated. And that's what's important,
good.
Right? The repair.
That is what is important.
And she did catch me at the end of the conference before I was leaving and apologized, which was awesome. Like, I was like, you don't need to. Like, I just really needed you to understand, like, we're talking about language here and how important language is. And this is a piece that's really important, not just because I have an eating disorder and you're talking about a table, but because the meaning behind it. And so, yeah, I think overall, like, I didn't leave with a bad taste in my mouth or anything along those lines, which I think could have happened had it been handled differently. And in all honesty, like, I'm sure other people had heard things throughout the conference that they maybe didn't agree with and didn't have an opportunity to, like, kind of get that feedback. But you do have access to the presenters that you can email and connect with. And I think that that piece is really important.
Oh, Rachel, thank you so much for being able to stand up and share that. I think it sounds like you were speaking on behalf of a lot of other people in the room who maybe tensed up as well. She was, Haley.
Yeah.
So I think when you have the ability to share your voice and you can, even when it feels uncomfortable or it's hard, that was just such a powerful moment and allowed that person to really understand better how they are creating that safety for their patient partners. So thank you so much for being there in that moment and then retelling it too, because I think we can all learn a lot from what does that look like to operate in a way that honors our patient partners and can support our families and our caregivers. Any final thoughts that either of you had from the PAM that you want to share before we close out?
I want to go back. It was excellent.
I think, I feel comfortable and confident in saying this because I think that PCORI will agree if they hear it. I think that when we are working like this and doing work like this, where we are wanting to put patients at the table, we have a lot of mountains to move. We have a lot of things we have to do. And we can never stop. And one of the closing statements from the entire conference is like, we have to continue to shift language and do better. And so I would just urge them to continue to do self-reflections and asking for those feedback pieces, and really understanding, like, when you are having patients, there's more than food allergies that go into a conference. Like, if you're coming and just making things more accessible, and looking at your location and your space to fit that. And so I think I would definitely go back, and I would go hopefully with like another Feeding Matters project. Like, that would be really cool if we could do that. And I think that we need to just continue to push people to have the language shift, to start really focusing on intentionality and kindness and research. I know that it can be a hard world, but also like that aspect of research does need to include kindness and understanding and less judgment in areas. So I think that would be my biggest piece and biggest takeaway, is that they've done a lot of groundwork. They're doing a lot of really hard work. There's a lot more to come and a lot more to do. And we can't become complacent with where we're at. We always have to keep growing and changing.
Oh, that's so great. Well, thank you both for sharing. And I was having FOMO while you were there. So if we do ever bring a project back, maybe I'll be able to go at that time. Yeah. So I'm sure I'm not alone with the consortium and having the FOMO while you guys are there either.
Well, people kept texting me like, how's it going? What's happening? Yeah, and like, yeah. Haley and I are not very big photo takers in general.
No, you've sent two photos.
Sorry.
I got more photos of presentations than I got of you two. so I have great photos of presentations.
We really, like, quite literally are not, like, even I remember this from the Feeding Matters conference. We're just not photo takers. Everybody else is asking for them. So that's probably why you need to come. Is more photo evidence.
That's funny. Well, until next time. And those of you listening, thank you for joining us on this journey. And hopefully sharing about this work makes you more interested in this work. We are coming up with different ways all the time to make sure more of our community at Feeding Matters is able to be included in this work, especially now that the consortium is looking at their next phase of being able to further research in that in a patient and a family-centered way. And so, thanks for listening. And Haley and Rachel, thanks for sharing your experience. Everybody have a great week.
Thank you.
You too.
You too.